Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Faith to Go podcast, your one-stop shop for everything you need to have faith discussions throughout your week with your friends and with your family. My name is David Tremaine, and I'm a congregational consultant with Troubling the Waters.
And I'm Charlotte Pressler, and I'm the Director of Formation for the Episcopal Diocese of San Diego.
And I'm Matt Collins, a retired priest in the Diocese of San Diego.
And welcome back, everybody, to this gospel discussion for this upcoming Sunday, January 28th, 2024. That'll be the fourth Sunday after the Epiphany in year B. And we're so excited to welcome the Reverend Dr. Mac Collins to the show. Mac, I saw your eyebrows go there with the Reverend Doctor. It's important. You worked hard for that.
A lot of difference in monetary compensation.
Yeah, the more letters you add to your name, just the less you make.
The only thing I can show for is an academic hood.
Yeah, that's right. Which you never wear.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And you know, in my graduation, not to make this very long, but it was a big graduation, 3,000 people, and they took our pictures, and they missed me.
Oh, no. So it's like it never happened.
The hood was all I had left, really.
Yeah, really.
That and a long shot that looked like the Super Bowl. I mean, wow. Who knows?
Well,
wow.
Where's Waldo?
Well, you got the letters to show for it, at
there
least.
There you go, exactly.
Yeah. And now you're on the podcast.
And now you're on the podcast, which is another thing to hang on your wall.
Yeah.
We give out coasters, not hoods.
Oh, coasters.
But you can get a coaster.
Yeah.
It's right here.
There.
That's yours.
Wow.
Well, thank you so much for coming, Mac. It's so fun to have you. We are so happy to have you all listening in, and we're excited to talk about this gospel for this upcoming Sunday. But first, we always love to know more about our guests on the pod. So, Mac, would you share with us a little bit about your ministry context, whether that's where you've been in ministry and maybe where you are now, what you're doing?
Well, you know, basically, this is like almost 39 years all here during tremendous change, a lot of turmoil. And I've done everything. I've been assistant to the dean at the cathedral, and then I was in exchange before the concordant with the Lutheran Church. I was an assistant of Incarnation Lutheran in Poway, interim rector of St. Bart's for a year and a half, vicar of Ramona, which most people don't know, for 6 months, and then eventually ended up at St. Mark's, City Heights, which was... It was interesting, let's just say. They bought a shopping mall with some money from the city taking the church. Basically, what we did there is ask what God would do. We had a couple of principles. One was we wouldn't allow paucity. What that meant is that if we felt God was asking us to do it, we wouldn't do it. I had more than one person tell me that we should center on one thing, and I wanted to say, why don't you come here and spend some time and see if you could really do that? I thought it was just the most insane thing to say. And so the Holy Spirit kept, you know, leaving like a cat things on our doormat. And, you know, I mean, at first
it was...
That's
a new description of the Holy Spirit for me.
It was, you know, it was like literacy, you know, in English. I mean, that was a diverse neighborhood. I forget how many different cultures there were there. There were refugees. If you were poor, that's where you started as a refugee in San Diego. And then, you know, you moved to El Cajon or not. Homelessness became more and more of a problem. We got involved in the community with food insecurity. And we were very involved with the community power structures. And so we just kind of responded to that. And then we went through a lot of different things, and some things didn't work. We had the apartments above us for a while for aged-out foster children. But there were other things that worked very well. When I hired an assistant, Heather Nunnery Smith, I said to her, leverage everything. And she took me at my word. I've never had anybody take me at my word as much as she did. And so the first thing you know, we've got national university people coming in, first to just help with a food pantry, and then they're looking around and saying, these people need health care. Then we got into showers, you know, with the diocese, and then we got into other things. And then we got our other parishes involved. Some other things were going well at the time. It was very gratifying but exhausting work. That was the time that I felt that most at home in my ministry, the 19, 20 years I was there. And now I'm retired, so now I just, you know, reflect, pray a lot. That's on the spiritual side. And then do other things.
Mm-hmm. And that's how I met Mac. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Mac and I have been friends for about 10 years. when he was at St. Mark's and I was at Christ Church was how we got to know each other. And we realized very quickly that both of us have a little bit of a penchant for making trouble, and that we also take great joy in the work that we are able to do together. I loved all the different things we got to do together, but it wasn't until just a few months ago that I realized that Mac was a podcast listener.
All right.
Yeah. So I am really appreciative to be able to share this time with you recording.
Good.
And if we find out you listen to the podcast, we're going
you're gonna
be on the podcast.
Yes.
That's just how it works. 100%. Thank you so much for sharing, Mac, about all that. And would you also share, like we like to do every week, a place where you saw or felt God's presence in your life?
As I said when we were talking about this at the beginning, I think it's God's presence in frustration. Because anywhere you look right now, it's troubling. And it has been troubling for some time. And, you know, but that's not what we signed up for no trouble. I'm confident, as I always am, that whatever's going on, the divine purposes are there. And, you know, I'm lucky. I have a large property and a garden, and I can go out there and I can sit and I can see harmony in creation when something's not killing something. But most of the time, I mean, you know, it's peaceful. And so I just think, you know, that these are tough times. They're tough times for people to talk to one another. And some of the issues that are systemic seem so huge that you wonder, you know, what's going to happen. But oftentimes those are ones of great hope because something is going to happen. Who knows what?
Got in the frustration.
Yeah.
That's great.
I really like it. Something to wrestle with.
And we would always love to hear from you all. If you would like to share something about your ministry context, or if you would like to share a place where you saw or felt God's presence in the world this last week or so, either a consolation or a desolation, or both, you can always get in contact with us. Also, with your questions or comments or stories from your week of faith discussion and reflection, you can email us, faith2go@edsc.org. You can contact us through Instagram @faith2go. You can direct message us there or tag us in a post. We'd love to hear from you. We have all those ways of getting in contact with us listed in the description for this episode. So you can just scroll down on your phone right now and click on one of those. And now we're going to move into our gospel discussion again for this upcoming Sunday, January 28th, 2024, the fourth Sunday after the Epiphany in year B. Charlotte is going to read the gospel, and then I'll have some context, and we'll each have a point. And the gospel is Mark 1, verses 21 to 28.
They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, he entered the synagogue and taught. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes. Just then there was in the synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent, and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. They were all amazed, and they kept on asking one another, "What is this? A new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." At once, his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee.
All right. Thanks, Charlotte.
You're welcome.
Here we are back in Mark's gospel, and this is the very next story after last week. So last week, we talked about the calling of the disciples, the first four, Simon, Andrew, James, and John. And this is the very next thing that happens. And we're still only halfway through the first chapter of Mark. So thanks be to Mark, you know, first gospel written. People just have to know, you know, so everything happens immediately. Because the translators sometimes want it to flow a little bit easier and be more readable, some of the immediately's don't get translated. It really is like they went to Capernaum and immediately went to a synagogue. Like that's what's actually there. But you can tell it's just like we're going really quick, one thing to the next. And so we're stopping here in a synagogue to get this story, and then we're moving right on to healing Simon Peter's mother at her house. So anyway, that'll be a story for another time. But today, Mark 1, 21 to 28, right in the middle of Mark's gospel, immediately, we will go to Mac for the first point.
Euthus is the Greek word.
Yes,
it's always there. Well, as I thought about this, I thought about the fact that Mark was writing, first of all, he's the only one who calls it a gospel, to Evangelion Jesu Christo, you know, that begins a thing that is there that is not common to anything else. So it's a whole new way of thinking about things. But he's writing after all the epistles. So I think one of the things he's doing is, and what the other gospel writers were doing, we're thinking about preserving the witness of Jesus because everybody thought he'd be back by now, mm-hmm. and he hadn't come back by now. So this setting in Capernaum is a very cosmopolitan place. They had a centurion and probably a very big synagogue. You know, only takes a few, but in synagogues, you know, came probably after the Diaspora, after they had been exiled and came back. And so here they were. And when we think about it, I think about it, my own experience of being in church and having, you know, I mean, mother or father, and no matter how much you'll love them, you know, every once in a while you wish for something different. So this morning you got a guest preacher and you really don't know, well, he could be good or may not be good. And, you know, you might doze off or whatever, but that didn't happen because he spoke well. But the most interesting thing to me is the disruption. You know, this is a very liturgical place. And like most places we go, we pretty much have an idea of what's going to happen next. And that didn't happen here. You had this disruption. And things were, you know, I think Mark uses this to think about the fact that the gospel is disruptive. Mm-hmm. And then I thought about, you know, the last word that Mark uses in his gospel is the Greek word gar. The other endings are kind of dressing up by someone else the end of the gospel. But that makes me think that Mark intended for this to be kind of an ongoing thing where we expect, I mean, I never give titles to my sermons, but if I would have titled the one I preached on this, I would have said, "The Sunday God Came to Church." Mm. Then I'm thinking about, you know, when other times in my life have I felt that way? Not very many.
Well, and I love that idea of the gospel is disruptive, which I actually think segues us to my point. Because I was thinking about that word choice of this experience being disruptive and the fact that they had been, every time they went, it was the same liturgy, the same experience. They had hit their rhythm. Perhaps the prayers were said by rote. Several of us who are Episcopalians, everybody in this room may know that feeling of the comfort of knowing something by rote, and then the opportunity that sometimes presents itself in that of not fully engaging with what you're praying or what you're saying, because it's so ingrained in what you're doing that your body just does it. Mm-hmm. Your mind and your body just participate that way. And so thinking about Jesus's presence here as disruptive is really helpful to me to think about that. And about that model. And my point that I was thinking about this week comes from that disruption, but how it was received. I think that's where I'm landing, because we have this language here where it says, they were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Little bit of shade thrown right there, right? It's not that Jesus came in with all of his backup documents as to why he has authority. Mm-hmm. It was what he was saying that they were then able to identify as authority. And not the authority of some sort of canned experience that they were always getting, mm-hmm. but out of this place of disruption. And that is that disruption of God. That is the fact that Jesus was the authority that he was speaking with had more to do with divine knowledge than an interpretation of what he was saying than the same thing that they were saying every week. Because what was being preached every week, I'm sure that they had an archive of sermons that they went back into and they picked the one that they were going to share that week. Not that that ever happens in church. Never. It was an accepted method of talking about what the scripture had identified, that what they were sharing had the accepted method of conveying what they had decided the community needed. And that to me is not just representative of church, but that is also representative of a lot of different systems. So obviously, our church systems or synagogue systems or any of those things have a way that they like to be. Maybe it's the liturgy, but maybe it is a subcurrent of expectations that runs underneath something. And it is when you walk in and you don't realize that you have sat in somebody's pew. Or you stand up for a section that everybody else stays seated for. Or that you hold your hands up instead of keeping them at your side. That there is an expectation, an undercurrent in almost every system that if you are not the person who is regularly in it, that you don't know. And that can then cause a disruption, that it's not an intentional one, but it also can make you feel as though you don't belong. And so I'm thinking about these people who are sitting in the pew and expecting things to go the way that they always go. And that then Jesus comes in and he starts teaching them, and they identify as what he's saying as being from someone with authority. But I'm so curious to know what it is that he said. Because it had to have woken them up. It had to have shaken things up in a new way that they were able to identify that authority as being divine, as coming from God, that it woke them up and it shook them and it shook the system. And then the other thing to think about that, and perhaps it leans more into the rest of Jesus's ministry because we are still here in chapter one, is that the other thing about systems is that they don't like to be shaken up.
So true.
That they always try to correct themselves, that they always want to come back to where they are comfortable so that the same people who have had power and have been able to design things the way that they have been all of these times stay in their very comfortable place, and that the people who are in the pews or in the world still respond to them in the ways that they always have. And I think that, you know, not to spoil anything that comes later in the gospel, but we do know that Jesus disrupted a lot of systems, and that a lot of what he was teaching and that people were hearing in this authority that came from him was the opposite of what they had always been hearing. That's what I was thinking about this week.
Yeah, I was thinking something similar for my point. Like, it's interesting that we don't hear what Jesus's teaching is, because if you think about, like, the other gospels, there's so much exposition, you know, like it would be as if in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew writes, Jesus got up on a mountain and taught, and then they went down the mountain, you know, it's like, well, what did he say? And what, it doesn't matter to Mark what he said. What matters is what he did, you know, like it's interesting just to think about Mark then as like, yes, the first gospel, the shortest gospel, being very kind of terse and being very to the point and things moving quickly. But also that, like, Mark is interested in, one, the ways Jesus is disrupting the system, like you're saying, you and Mac have said, and that the focus is on what Jesus does and not just on what Jesus says, because the actions are the important thing. And that's partially what the authority is coming from, is that, like, the scribes are all talk and no action. You know, the Pharisees, as Jesus is going to say all the time, are hypocrites because they say one thing and do other things. What's astonishing maybe to the crowd is that Jesus teaches something and then does something that's exactly in line with the teaching. So we can assume, based on what he does, that the teaching was about healing people. Mm. You know, I was also thinking, like, what is it that, you know, causes Mark to be able to throw such shade at the scribes? Like, what is it that Jesus's teaching was that the scribes wasn't? I'm just imagining, like, to go to this kind of, yes, to go to, into this kind of, like, institutional setting where there's expectations of not just where you sit, but, like, how things are going to go, what's going to be said. That, like, to have a person come in, I'm just imagining that Jesus's message of liberation is the thing that resonated with people and gave him authority. That they recognized that, oh my gosh, God is a liberating force in the world. And for this person to come in and talk to us about how God is interested in liberating us, rather than hearing the scribes tell us the rules and how to follow them better and how to upkeep the institution, like, that resonates at such a deeper human level. And we've all felt that. You know, and that's how we recognize people with authority. We don't necessarily have to see their degrees to know that they're speaking wisdom to us, because it comes from their, one, their experience as human beings, and two, their desire for liberation and healing for people. And then Jesus turns around and heals someone again on the Sabbath. And this isn't a story where we have people coming in and going, like, how could he heal on the Sabbath? But it's kind of understood, you know, that you don't do that. So I don't think it's a coincidence that the first setting for Mark's gospel, for Jesus's public ministry, is at that epicenter of communal religious life, and that there's a disruption in that communal religious life, and it is Jesus healing someone, and that it is disruptive to institutions and systems. Whenever healing someone is disruptive to a system, it means the system's not working and that it is broken. And that is what Mark is getting everybody ready for. You know, like Matthew says, here's the first thing Jesus is going to do. And it's this long teaching, Sermon on the Mount. Mark says, here's the first thing Jesus is going to do. This sets the tone for everything else. Jesus teaches liberation and heals people. Now get ready to watch that happen for the rest of his ministry and get ready for him to die because of that, you know, because he is so disruptive that the system can't handle it anymore. It's just interesting to have so little detail about what he says, so much more detail about what he does. We can extrapolate from the doing what the teaching might have been. And to think in religious institutional contexts, like, where are we stuck, you know, and where are our leaders more interested in institutional upkeep than liberation and healing for people, you know? And I think it's actually more present than we'd like to admit most of the time. That's just kind of like a natural outcome of having a very structured institutional religious setting. It didn't just happen 2,000 years ago with Jesus in this story. It happens all the time. And so we have to be asking ourselves, how are we upkeeping those kind of oppressive systems? And how can we disrupt them? You know, and where are people disrupting them where we can go listen to that kind of authoritative teaching that comes from a different place of authority than the institution itself?
It's funny, David, because as you were talking, I was also connecting that back to what Max said in his point about the gospel being disruptive, because I think that there is a temptation to sanitize the gospel or to like try to contain it into some sort of structure or box, because the gospel is disruptive.
Yeah.
And it's in those seasons when we say that it isn't, or when we try because we're uncomfortable. Because the gospel is also uncomfortable.
Right.
That when we try to make it more palatable or more contained or less disruptive, that is when we know that we are operating in a broken system, that we aren't doing what we're actually called to in these gospels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was thinking about, as you're talking, David, about, you know, the content, and, you know, Charlotte said that too. I think that's, there's a Greek word, it's kerygma. That is sometimes used to describe what he might have been saying. And the trouble is, it's not just what he's saying. It helps to think about what we see embodying. You know, he was talking about systemic change, and I think that's what hooked them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do that. A lot of people like to hear people talk about that, but they're not going to go get on the bus. And so I think that was happening. I was thinking about Bonhoeffer, who talked about Jesus being pro-me. So here Jesus, I mean, what differentiates it from other things and anything we don't have now is that here he's standing in this moment in history, and this is what Mark is insinuating. The same thing you were talking about was everything's changed. Mm-hmm. Everything has changed. Nothing is the same. And maybe they were getting a little complacent. Maybe that was a reason for writing the gospel too, and thinking that this is going to need to be read over and over again, because, and they're going to need to think about the complacency part of it. The fact that it is about systemic change, and that comes through living with the power of the Spirit, and, you know, finding those things on our doormat the cat left consistently.
Yep.
And it's not going to change. And then the other thing is, you know, that systemic change, if you've been at it for a while, another thing you become aware of is that when you are removed or something else changes in that and things start to go back to status quo, that isn't necessarily a failure. It's a setback. But things are not the same. And, you know, the thing about the gospel, the democracy of it, is that I think it affects people to a point that people, they catch that piece of it, and they don't necessarily do the work where you think they might need to. I mean, it doesn't, for example, it's not going to take place in the church. It's going to be out there. And they may not do it in a way that even reflects our own ideas about what God is like. But I think you have to have that view of the Spirit and of God to have hope in the world.
Yeah, Richard Rohr has, I think this is a Richard Rohr thing, where he said that Jesus came to make God free for people again. You know, that like the religious leaders in any context throughout history are not the ones doling out God's love to you. That is free. So it's like, yeah, Jesus was there to free people, but also to free God from the shackles of religion. You know, that like, you don't need a mediator, you know, to be in relationship to God, you know. And that is liberating as well, because like, you're releasing people from the bonds of the institution in that way. Just like Bonhoeffer's thing, God for me, you know. There we are. 3 points. Well done, team.
Thank you.
Point number one was Max talking about disruption. The disruption of the unexpected amidst the expectations, you know, of the rote of what we think we're about to see. And how God is in those disruptions. And then Charlotte's was like unto it, thinking about where our authority comes from. Our authority comes from God, you know, shaking up our systems, disrupting our systems. And we can find those voices of, you know, deeper divine authority in all of our systems when we're seeing them being shaken up. And mine, similar to that, thinking about the connection between Jesus' teachings and his actions, you know, that his actions are about healing and being like human and person focused rather than institution focused. The difference between that kind of teaching and the teaching of the religious leaders of the time and our time. Mm-hmm. So having heard those 3 points, we'd love to know what your point would have been if you'd been on the pod this week. You can, again, always get in contact with us in those ways listed in the description for this episode. We'd love to hear of any of your questions or comments or stories from your week of faith discussion and reflection, something about your ministry context that you'd like to share, or your God sighting from this week. Thank you to Mac.
Yes, we
Thanks,
do.
Thanks, Mac, for being on the podcast.
You're welcome.
Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week to talk about the fifth Sunday after the Epiphany in year B. That'll be for the first Sunday in February.
I can't believe it.
I know. I thought you were shaking your head like I was wrong. I was like, no, I don't think there's more Sundays after the 28th.
No, it was not that you were
there
incorrect.
There are 35 days of January, which we all know.
No. I thought there were 63.
The first Sunday in February. And until then, we say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.